This is Rob Long with Martini Shot for The Ankler. When stand-up comics are out of material, they resort to the old cliches, you know, like what's up with the sexes and the nuts who run the country and the differences between New York and Los Angeles. I'm about to do a little bit of that. These days, I spend a lot of time in New York, you see, and if it's one thing I've learned about people in New York, it's this, that they spend a lot of time talking about Los Angeles. Sitting in coffee shops or bars or just sitting down wherever, because a lot of being a New Yorker is wrapped up in sitting or looking for a place to sit, my ears keep picking up phrases like last week in Silver Lake and there's a new place on Abbot Kinney in really unlikely places like waiting for the D train in the West 4th Street station or at the Chick-fil-A on 6th Avenue. On the other hand, when I'm back in L.A., I don't really hear people talking about New York much. I mean, mostly they talk about their Hulu series and who is reading their spec, which is not to suggest that L.A. is somehow more businesslike or productive than New York. Neither really is much of either. But since I have a script due and I'm already late on another writing project, I spend a lot of time sitting quietly in places, staring out into space, totally motionless, which means that I overhear a lot of conversations, which are what that's what writers are supposed to do. We're supposed to overhear things and write them down in our notebooks. We're all supposed to carry notebooks and then spin wild generalizations about snippets we heard but can't possibly understand or make spare sad little portraits in our minds of the woman, for instance, I heard talking near me in the big room of my Manhattan workspace about how a lot of people these days, like many of her friends, are thinking more seriously about getting an Aston Martin instead of, you know, a BMW or a Bentley. The Aston Martin, for those of you who aren't into cars, is a very high-end luxury British car, the one that James Bond drives. Now, I'm pretty sure she was talking to somebody who worked for Aston Martin or for whom Aston Martin was a major client, and that person was thinking of hiring some kind of enthusiastic marketing person because she was really selling herself hard. And, you know, look, for all I know, there is a wave of Aston Martin buyers out there that would come under the heading of things happening not in my demographic department. But the writer in me couldn't stop trying to send the job seeker this mental message. Stop trying so hard. Even people who work for Aston Martin don't have a lot of friends who are going to buy an Aston Martin. In Los Angeles recently, doing roughly the same thing, sitting motionless and staring into the middle distance until enough time had passed that I could legitimately call it a day, I overheard two people talking about a recent project that had less success with audiences than the producers had hoped. I mean, that's not the way the two people I overheard put it. People in Los Angeles, in my experience as a person who spends a lot of time in Los Angeles, tend to put things like disappointing box office performances or lower-than-hoped television ratings in apocalyptic terms. We do what psychologists call awfulize events. But it was a lot more about who was about to get fired and industry inside knowledge than what I had heard the week before, which was all about the huge number of people really getting into a $200,000 car. But what I heard in Los Angeles was also at root a sales conversation, a kind of a job interview. But that's the big difference between these two cities. In New York, you're trying to sell yourself as richer than you are. In Los Angeles, you're trying to sell yourself as knowing more than you do. All of which, I guess, is a reason to live anywhere else. But knowing the rules in show business, knowing the secrets of this murky, fog-shrouded industry, I mean, that's what we really want in show business. We want to know what they're buying and when and in what format. We want to know which executive is about to be fired or promoted or fired and then promoted, which is usually how it goes, and which young person who doesn't seem to be very impressive is about to become very important. Show business, people in show business will tell you, is a creative place, but mostly when we get together, we focus on what you cannot do, what you're wasting your time writing, what studio is not buying, what actor is not available. Once, sitting around with some friends, we tried to come up with the titles of shows that sounded funny or interesting, titles of shows we would definitely watch, or at least a few episodes, but that would never, ever go for whatever reason. And of course, some titles were rude or crazy or nonsensical, some were mysterious, some were too political, but I won the little contest, I'm proud to say, with the title of a show I actually always kind of wanted to do, but can't. I let the little voice in my head tell me, no, not this, this won't work. All right, I'll tell you. The title of the show is this. Liza Minnelli, Private Detective. Okay, now just stop now for a minute. Just listen. Can you just listen here? Let me just tell you the pilot. This is the show. it's Liza Minnelli, and she's, you know, she's Liza in real life. Well, real-ish life. And she's always getting ready for a show or rehearsing or something. She's got an assistant, a kind of a dour, no-nonsense type, and a stress case of a manager. And she's always being distracted by mysterious murders and cases that pop up in her real life. It's sort of like Murder, She Wrote, but with Liza Minnelli. Murder, she danced. Murder, she jazz-handsed. So she's at the local Starbucks. This is how it opens. She's at the local Starbucks getting her usual coffee from her usual barista, who's a sweet young guy, and she sees him every day, and they always exchange a few nice words. And this morning, though, as she's heading off to rehearsal with her sour-faced assistant herding her along, this morning, before she can get her coffee, the place is surrounded by cops, and they arrest the young man, and they drag him away. "I didn't do it," she shouts to Liza as he's led away. "I know you didn't, baby," she shouts back. "Didn't do what?" her assistant asks. "I have no idea," Liza answers, "but I know he didn't do it." So she's off to solve the murder. It was a murder, of course, and exonerate her favorite barista. And of course, that means that she keeps missing rehearsals and putting off her own career to solve the crimes and help the people that surround her every day. But it's Liza, right? So it's not like she can, you know, just drive or read a map or work her iPhone. She needs her long-suffering and humorless assistant to help. But in the pilot, her assistant and her manager stage a kind of an intervention, and they refuse to help her. They're not going to drive her anywhere. So I'm envisioning a scene where she gets on a random city bus and she asks the driver to take her to a specific address. She just hands him a piece of paper with an address on it, which, of course, he refuses to do. So she turns to the other passengers and offers up a passionate plea, which is kind of the heart of the series. She says, "I'm Liza Minnelli. I need your help," she says. "Please help me. Help me help someone who really needs it." And then we cut to the bus, arriving at that destination, while inside, Liza is leading a sing and dance along with the delighted passengers, because people really are kind and good and willing to do the right thing. And of course, the barista is innocent, and Liza solves the case, and we're good until next week, when she needs to ask us all over again to help her do the right thing. Liza Minnelli, private detective. I know, it could, you know, it could be big. But look, I know it can't be big, I mean, for a zillion reasons, but mostly because I once did, and I'm kind of proud of this, I did somehow get someone who is Liza Minnelli's person, or was Liza Minnelli's person at the time, I don't know, lawyer, manager, whatever, and that person said, "Liza's not available," which, you know, she probably wasn't, this was a few years ago, but a successful person in show business does not let that stop them, and that is why I have never achieved the kind of stratospheric success that others have, because I heard Liza's not available, and I thought, okay, Liza's not available. I mean, it's just one of those show business rules. When someone's not available, you move on. And the thing is, I should have known better. When I was trying to break into show business, an older, more experienced writer, and I think he was maybe 25, I think he once had a script optioned by a Serbia-based producer, but I thought he knew everything. He told me that the only way to break into television writing was to be on a list of network-approved writers. It was a real list, he said, with a lot of names on it, and only those names would ever be hired to be on a writing staff. "Get your name on that list," he said. "It's the only way." So I spent a good year trying to just see that list, trying to find anyone who had seen it, trying to track it down, who compiled it, where it was kept, how you get on it. I would ask people in show business, "So about this list of approved writers," and half the time they looked at me blankly, and the other half they just assumed I meant it, you know, metaphorically. Well, one way to get on this list that you speak of, an actual working writer once said to me, he was 35, practically a gray, and he was the supervising producer of a big hit comedy at the time. But when he said list, he used air quotes, "this list you speak of." That was my first clue. That one, there was no list. And two, that as long as you believe that there's a list, you will never be on it. People on the outskirts of the business and people on the inskirts, too, for that matter, spent a whole lot of time creating ordering mechanisms in their heads, lists, policies, secret contracts that they imagine govern the complicated and unpredictable world of show business, because randomness is just too scary. I mean, that means anything can happen to anyone, good or bad. So people trying to break in focus on a list they need to be on, searching out the keepers and the writers of that list, even though there is no such list. You know, unless I'm wrong and there really is a list and I'm on it. And that case, you know, I'm not here to make waves. But that's how people trying to break into show business think about things. They see a high castle wall built of mysterious rules, but people inside the business do sort of the same thing. They focus on other kinds of rules and guidelines to help them get by. You can't do that, I was once told by an executive at a large studio. You can't end the B story in a swing set in the third act without first resolving the A story in the main set. Why can't I? I asked, pretending to understand what he just said. Because it breaks the story rule, he said. I wasn't aware that there was such a story rule, really, until just then, aside from the really big one, which is don't be boring, or if you're doing a comedy, don't be boring and be funny. But there's a rule in that executive's head anyway, and it's that you can't end the B story in a swing set in the third act until you resolve the A story in the main set. And that doesn't make any sense, but it's a rule. It could be followed and checked and crossed off the list of things that make the story work. It's something objective. It can be measured. It's stupid, of course, and total nonsense, and completely misses the point of entertainment, which is, as I've said, to be totally unboring, but it's a rule, and it's comforting. And we cling to these rules and lists because we really have a hard time grasping just how strange and risky and unknowable most of what we do in this business is. Getting hired as a writer means first getting on a list. Stories only work if they follow certain rules. I think we'd all be a lot happier. And we'd probably end up being a lot more successful, actually, if we just stopped believing all those things. If we just told ourselves at the start of every day, Liza is available. And that's it for this week. Next week, we will try to replace everyone else with AI, and they will try to replace us. For The Ankler, this is Rob Long with Martini Shot.